Chris, would you take the roll?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And I don't see Justin Sturgeon. So if you will join me in rising, we have Troop 808 that will be posting our colors for us tonight and leading our Pledge of Allegiance.
Postal flag of the United States of America. Color guard, postal flag of the great state of Idaho. Color guard, honor your colors. Please recite the Pledge of Allegiance with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Two. Color guard, about face. Color guard, forward march. Color guard, dismissed.
Please be seated.
This can put you out of a job, boss. Nice. Well done. Well done. That was flawless. Thank you so much. All right. The first item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Is there any questions, comments, motions?
Good. Mayor, I move we accept the consent agenda as published.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda as published. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Next, we have a public hearing continued from November 6, 2019, and consideration to approve 1908 AN annexation and 1904-S preliminary plat for Indian Creek at Crimson Point subdivision. And this is a public hearing. Is there anybody who didn't sign up on the sheet out there that wants to testify in this matter? Okay, thank you. All right, so where we are in this process is we did go ahead and open the public hearing to take comment from anybody who couldn't make it to the second meeting. We haven't heard staff report or anything to that. No one did comment from the last meeting. So, Troy.
Address is 751 West 4th Street here in Kena. Planning and Zoning Department. Am I on? My button's right. Okay. That's fine. Should I start over? Sorry, for the record again, Mr. Mayor, Troy Buchanan, Planner 3, 751 West 4th Street, Kena Planning and Zoning Department. The application before you tonight is the Indian Creek at Crimson Point subdivision. For tonight's hearing, the site has been posted and two letters were sent to landowners within 450 feet. Staff followed up with a non-traditional courtesy notice for tonight's hearing. The applicant is seeking annexation of approximately 8.6 acres from Ada County into the city of Cuna. They are seeking an R8 designation or an R8 zone, which does conform to the future land use map approved by this council. The future land use map does indicate that the property should be medium density residential, and the R8 zone does conform with that. The applicant is looking to place up to 33 lots for homes on those properties, with an additional 6 common lots. The net density, which is everything minus the streets, would be 5.6 dwelling units per acre. Staff finds that this is in concert with the future land use map. The applicant has proposed connection to an existing substreet to the south, which is in Crimson Point subdivision number 6, I believe. That drive is called Thistle Drive, which is a requirement of the city to provide connections to undeveloped properties and then also to connect to them. They are continuing that connection with a street through their project, and it will then line up with a subdivision to the north of this project in the future. Thus, it will comply with the city standards to provide and connect to provided substreets. That subdivision was approved actually a while ago. The applicant does propose to meet all of our standards for connectivity and all of the R8 zoning designation standards, which is a very big deal for the city. For all of these reasons listed, for all of the reasons listed in the ACHD staff report, there's a lot of benefits for connecting to existing roadways. Staff supports these reasons within the ACHD staff report as stated. We have worked very closely with the applicant to bring this project before you tonight. They do meet all of the future land use map goals. They meet the comprehensive plan goals, and they are also providing a significant portion of open space for recreation, in addition to providing a pathway that will connect along Indian Creek. They will work with the applicant has already stated that at the Planning and Zoning Commission hearing that they will work with the Parks Department to dedicate that common lot to the city. At the commissioner's public hearing, they did forward some conditions of approval that they had arrived at, and they recommend approval. I will stand by for any questions that you might have.
Okay, questions for Troy. Thank you. Okay, so we do have a couple of people to testify. So testifying in, oh, I'm sorry, that's not testifying. I just got to look at that box and see where it's checked. Brandon Carver, if you would come up to the podium and state your name and address for the record, sir. Thank you.
Brandon Carver, 2258 North Glacier Blue Road in Cuna, Idaho, 83634. I don't have any problems with the homes being built. My biggest grievance is with the way they're being accessed by driving through my neighborhood. I've already got numerous cars that fly up and down my street, and I'm worried about the 24 or so children, small children that live along that road. I've been out there watching these children for the last 3 years that I've lived there, and the average speed of a car going up and down Navy Drive, which connects to Thistle right where they're planning on adding the homes to, has got to be above the speed limit. I've sent a couple of requests to the police department to come and see if they could do anything, and I never heard anything back. I'm not 100% sure I requested that correctly.
Okay.
But I don't have any problems with the homes being built. They're going to be built. It's progress. That's fine. My biggest problem is just the way that they're going to be accessed and why it can't come off of Ardell directly, why it has to come back through the neighborhood and loop back around. I feel that's a safety issue.
Okay. If you do ever have issues with things like that, if you want to contact ACHD, they usually will set that up. Otherwise, if there's an issue that arises, you can always call our CUNA Police Department and they'll help.
Okay.
Get that going too. But thank you very much. Did anybody have any questions for? Okay. Thank you. Lisa Dugan.
Lisa Dugan, 3028 West Navy Street. So I live on Navy Street, and the subdivision is going to be built right up next to my backyard fence, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So in order to access the way that it is set up with planning and zoning is that the traffic is going to flow down Rubine. They're going to have to turn left, go straight down Navy Street, and then wrap around the corner onto Thistle. The corner on Thistle is basically one house. I am the second house in from the corner, and I am also deeply concerned about traffic. There will be, if an average home has two cars, there will be 75 cars going down Navy Street, a street that has, like Brandon said, 30 children. And this is 30 children under high school age that are always out on the street where currently, it is a dead end, so there has been no traffic. It literally hits the creek and stops. So that is one of my biggest issues is the access point, because we don't know when that future lot will be built that is to the north of us, providing that second access point. My other question, I guess, I don't know if it's for planning and zoning or I don't know how this works, sorry.
Yeah, you're fine. Go ahead.
Was how come we cannot punch through Ardell? There is a common space that Crimson Point HOA currently owns, and we would be, I'm sure the HOA would approve getting rid of the three trees that are standing on what would be the end of Ardell, where it stops, where the proposed houses will be on that other side. Another one of my neighbors was just also really concerned about punching through Ardell, and it would require relocating the irrigation abutment and possibly in that common area. So that is my largest concern, is the safety of kids. And I would hate for someone to hit a kid and then this was overlooked as a safety concern.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
So Ardell does not currently go through? So they won't be able to access this subdivision from Ardell? Is
correct.
That... Oh, okay.
Do you have the map right in front of you?
I do, yes.
Can I show you what I'm talking about?
Let's see if I can get it. There's a bigger version. Yeah, if you would.
Okay. So currently Ardell stops at this point right here, as you can see. And this yellow, that thin yellow space is a common area. All it has on it is three trees.
Okay.
We planted it on it because it was doing nothing. We didn't actually know it was owned by Crimson Point. And so we want that punch through to go through to Ardell. It was made to be driven on. Gainsboro has an opening to Ardell. So the fact that it doesn't have any street lines, I think, is a void point, because Crimson Point built it to be an access point to Gainsboro and to Rubine.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we can get clarification on that.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions?
Okay. Nope.
Thank you. And that's all I had signed up to testify. Was there anybody else who wished to testify didn't get a chance to yet? Yes. If you would sign in, okay. That would be awesome.
Gosh, is this your first meeting?
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Tim Eck. I live at 6152 West Half Moon Lane, Eagle, Idaho. I didn't sign up to speak on this application, but I do own the property to the north of this application. So I thought I would just offer my knowledge of that property to you should you have any questions pertaining to the street connectivity and where the property lines actually are at. Currently, the property that we own goes to the center line of Ardell. So this property could not extend Ardell through their own property. There's Crimson Point Common Area, then they have a piece, and then we have a piece. When we develop, we will connect to the substreet that they have that goes to the north. And we anticipate that development will start this year. But I thought I would just offer my knowledge of what's north to you if you have any questions pertaining to the connectivity.
So do you believe then that Ardell will go on through to that eventually?
Currently, I think it's Rubine is intended to stub across Ardell, and Ardell will terminate into Rubine. Access will be taken through the Ewing property. They had deeded a piece of right-of-way to ACHD 10 years ago. ACHD vacated that right-of-way. We have the ability to modify our entrance coming off Ardell that will turn into our project, but it won't continue to create a connection to them until we build an interior road that will provide access for their substreet. Their substreet is actually lined up with ours because our plat has been approved for some time. But currently, Ardell won't stub straight into either subdivision.
Tim, are you telling me ACHD does not have the right-of-way all the way to the creek? They
no,
just stop right there?
It vacates right there.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody have any further questions for Tim?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Okay, well, that's all we had signed up for any testimony, so.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. Just for the record, Troy Buchanan, I just wanted to point out that the applicant actually has not had a chance to present.
Okay, do we have an applicant here? Oh, okay. Again, I don't have a name or anything on here, so I don't know. I guess if you want to come up, and so we need to have your name down for the record, so if you want to sign up here. And what's your name?
Josh Beach.
You signed up to not testify.
Well, not as on any specific item, but I am the applicant, so I figure I have the opportunity to present my.
Oh, well, that's why you didn't get called, is you signed up to not testify.
I figured that would be automatic, but that was my mistake. So, for the record, Josh Beach, business address 4824 West Fairview Avenue. So, as Troy mentioned, did a great job. This is a preliminary plat and an annexation for 33 homes on 8.68 acres. It's roughly 22% open space, quite a bit. And as Troy said, a portion of that is going to be on the west side of the creek that we're working with and have spoken with the Parks Department to dedicate to the city potentially in the future. I'd like to thank Troy and staff for all the work they've done in getting us to the point we are today with this. We'll also say that we are in agreement with the conditions of approval listed in Section L of the staff report. Mr. Mayor, as you mentioned, there were several things at the Planning and Zoning Commission that they brought up as concerns, and so I'd like to go over those quickly if I could. First, clarify how parking works within the neighborhood. Each lot is, each home has four parking spaces. We are two on the driveway and two in the garage, and we have 50 foot of right-of-way for all of the streets, and that's parking on both sides. So it was a roughly 175 parking spaces, if you include the two in the driveway, two in the garage for each lot, as well as all of the street parking, and that I believe to be quite a bit of parking, ample parking for such a small development like this. Secondly, there was a recommendation that we provide, instead of a 5-foot asphalt pathway, that we provide an 8-foot asphalt pathway. We're great with that condition, and we'll comply with that as requested by the Planning and Zoning Commission. Third, there was some discussion as to transitioning from existing neighborhoods. We feel that, you know, our larger lots that we're proposing are up against the existing homes, and feel that we transition away from them and get a little bit smaller the further we get from those existing neighbors. So, and again, in the staff report that recommends approval from staff, they're in support of our transition. We comply with the comprehensive plan and the policy and the goals therein. So we'd ask that that any condition that requires us to lose several lots or whatnot be removed as a condition of approval. The last item is Troy mentioned that we initially requested R8 zoning, which does comply with the comprehensive plan. We are comfortable, and as recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission, going to R6. All of our lots will comply with those dimensions, and we're comfortable with that. Like I said, we're in agreement with the conditions listed in L, and with those couple deletions of conditions from the Planning and Zoning Commission, and I can hand out or kind of go through them one more time if you'd like to. Here again, what we're asking for. I don't have a visual for you. I can hand you a piece of paper that shows it, or I can just read them to you again, whichever you'd prefer.
Okay. And so you're talking about the site plan?
So I've created just a document that kind of goes through the conditions that were added by the Planning and Zoning Commission just to kind of...
Oh, okay. And I apologize. Your name was on the agenda. So
okay, no worries.
That teach me to pay attention.
You have any other specific questions?
Are you looking at conditions 1 through 12 on L?
So in on the staff report in through L, we're in agreement with those conditions as written
those
by staff.
Those 12 conditions.
Yep. So there are, like I said, there were several recommended changes from Planning and Zoning Commission that I wanted to cover. But other than that, we are. We have no issues with the conditions.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. Anybody have any questions? Yes,
please.
Go ahead.
That's okay. Our fire department responded talking about a secondary access point if there was over 30 buildable permits. Do you have any plans or on this map somewhere am I missing? Is
we
there
do.
No secondary
so, and
access?
I can actually hand my iPad. Showing my iPad. We've got an emergency access show, and it's coming out to Ardell there. It's wide enough for a 20-foot emergency access. And it has been covered. The ACHD and staff have not, that road won't be extended, but there is sufficient right-of-way for a 20-foot access for fire. Yeah. It will be temporary, so that will go away when Mr. Eck develops his property and there's another way out. So that will be held until such time as there's another access point. Yeah. Okay.
Did you ever have any discussions on Ardell punching on through?
Yeah,
I'm assuming you did.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine. I'm assuming you did.
We did. So we spoke with ACHD several times. Planning and Zoning Commission actually continued us one hearing to get some additional answers. We worked with staff. In the findings document, there's a large paragraph in red that Troy was able to kind of go through and explain why why that's not going to be extended. There is not sufficient right-of-way there for a road, and it will not continue past the creek. And that was the decision that was made from the highway district and the city jointly. So.
Okay. Anybody have any further questions for the applicant? Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, now that's all we had signed up to testify.
I have a question for Bobby, if
yes,
I may. So if in the future they decide to give us the portion of land on the west side of the creek, as they said they've talked to you about, is it accessible for us, or what do you think there? Musical mics.
Mayor, Councilman McPherson, yeah, we do have another parcel of land on the west side of the creek over there around Crimson Point, and it is I believe it is. It would be connecting it on the other side of the creek. So.
Okay.
And there would be a footbridge.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you.
Where would the footbridge be? In that section?
Well.
You're talking about one for the future, right?
There actually is an existing footbridge right now in Crimson Point.
Right.
And I don't know what the distance from this project to the footbridge is, but roughly, give or take a house or two, it's about 10 houses away.
783 steps.
And one foot
lifted. I'm
sorry,
I did the mayor's walking challenge and I got all those steps down now.
Give or take a house or two, it's about 10 houses away south of
okay.
of this project. But the west side that Bobby was talking about, they touch.
Okay.
And
okay.
So it would
connect. I see that now, yeah. Good. Had to get a better map. Okay.
I'm sorry, the Ardell not going through is the one thing. I don't know why I didn't notice that before, but that's what's got me stuck here right now. I'm trying to figure that out, but I did find the notation that Josh had mentioned there about that, so although I don't understand why that didn't end up getting to be a through street there, but I guess I don't have to.
So, Mr. Mayor, again, for the record, Troy Buchanan, a significant part of this that is not actually part of this application is the fact that a number of years ago, staff and the developer to the north, who's here tonight, we did meet with ACHD, and the consideration for the expense of going up and over the freeway or the creek and the railroad at that location was so significant that it wouldn't warrant that as a necessary item, especially with another connection, which is a far better connection to Black Cat, just to the north, just about a half a mile. That was a much better proposition. So there was, as Mr. Eck pointed out, there was some vacation of the right-of-way, which did have not only planning and zoning, but the engineer's recommendation, or I guess the support for the termination of Ardell at that location. It just didn't meet the rise. It didn't rise to the occasion of necessity.
Right, and I understand why they wouldn't go over the creek. Yeah. I get that. It just seems that it wouldn't have connected on in.
Yeah, another significant portion of that discussion is where the Crimson Point HOA lot is on the south side of the termination of Ardell. The developer, Mr. Eck, he actually owns on the north side of the half right-of-way. There's just not enough room for a full-size road to enter that property at that location. That's why there's only a 20-foot emergency access until a secondary access is provided. There just isn't enough room.
How will they designate an emergency access? Will it be some kind of a barricade in there?
Maybe that's a question for the applicant. I believe that there would be either a barricade or two, but in addition to that, it wouldn't look like a regular road. There wouldn't be curb and gutter, and there certainly wouldn't be sidewalk. There would be foot access, but that's about it.
Okay.
But typically there are barricades at one end.
So you'd have to get out and move sawhorses.
Probably. Saw horses, saw cows, whatever it takes.
Thank you. Further questions?
Yes, I'm still a little confused on, I know temporarily they are going to have to use Daly Street, but once that development is built to the north, there's going to be a connection point somehow to withdraw into Arroyo Vista off Navy Street instead. I guess I'm just confused how those are going to connect to stop that concern from all that traffic driving through Crimson. Is there something on the map I'm missing? Is there... It's just stated in staff analysis.
So
that's what's happening.
So there's the property, which is the 8.6 acres of Indian Creek. That really is the only thing between Arroyo Vista, which is a future forthcoming subdivision of 215 homes. Tim's on record tonight saying that they hope to start that next year. So those 250 homes, they're going to access Navy Street anyway, because we have the policy in city code for to and through. And developers are required to provide connections to undeveloped parcels for safety reasons, for daily services reasons, for emergency reasons, and Thistle was approved by City Council as a connection to the parcel to the north, and the end game is Arroyo Vista, which is 215 homes. So they're going to connect into Thistle Drive as city code requires. It will snake along, and then it will meet up. It will sneak through their Indian Creek subdivision, and then it will connect into Arroyo Indio. So realistically, what we're looking at is it's either Arroyo Vista connects directly to Thistle Drive, or Thistle Drive connects to Indian Creek, and then it connects to Arroyo Vista.
So it looks like the access is actually going to go through that park property. Is that right? Over to the next subdivision to the north?
It will. It will connect to the subdivision to the north. And then in the lower southeast corner of Arroyo Vista, there will be a connection to Ardell. So people will be able to access Ardell without using Navy Street. However, they will be able to use Indian Creek to access Crimson Point and vice versa, Crimson Point to Arroyo Vista. And as soon as the second connection point is established and accepted and improved, then that emergency access would then be removed. There would be no need for it.
Refresh my memory again. What are they going to do with that once they abandon it, once the access is all the way to the north, all the way to the south?
Perhaps the applicant could address that.
Okay. If you would, please.
I'd be glad to. So again, Josh Beach, business address 4824 West Fairview Avenue, Boise. So I guess just to clarify, it's hard to do without a visual, right? You can't see what's going on. I've got pulled up, if I could, hand this to you folks, and you can look at it. It's just a map.
Okay.
It highlights the subject development as well as Mr. X just north of us. It doesn't have the actual road layouts on there, but I can kind of maybe walk you through what we're talking about. Okay, so if you see on that far, on your right, there's a little, the lot lines are all in green. So there's a little, basically, I believe Mr. Eck can answer this question better than I can. But he was able to purchase a little, kind of a corner, kind of a right angle that goes down to Ardell from his subdivision. I believe that is where he will be accessing Ardell from his subdivision, as well as to the stub that we're going to provide to him. So as soon as that connection is made, and I'm not sure if can you see that there, Mr. Mayor, what I'm talking about there on the map? So there will be another access point very close to where we're going to stub our access to the north. So as soon as that happens, the emergency access that we're providing will go away, and there'll be a way to get in and come back down into the subdivision, as well as still being able to go on Navy Street and up through Thistle to the subdivision. So there'll be several ways you can get in and out of this development.
Oh, I see. So we can see
I get that, but similar. What are you going to do with that right of the emergency access on the north after X roadways and whatnot are open?
So ask me that one more time.
So the emergency, the 20-foot wide emergency fire lane you're going to have now, what will become of that property once?
It will be a buildable lot. So that access then will go away. So there'll be basically a plat note that says that this emergency access cannot go away until there's a secondary access. And fire wouldn't give us a building permit to do it anyway. So we're restricting ourselves knowing we need an emergency access. Now, if your question is having to do with that right-of-way that's right there past our emergency access, that's not our property. We don't own that.
No, but once your subdivision's done, Mr. Eck builds his, everything's all connected. We've got streets going everywhere.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with that chunk of ground? I don't want a big weed patch
or something.
That's what I'm asking.
It's a buildable lot. And there'll be a fence put up there.
That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah.
Okay. And just kind of so the record, the map that he was showing us is quite similar to the Pathways Master Plan, which is on page 120 of 287 in our packet. That's not it exactly, but it is similar. Actually, page 119 is actually a little closer yet.
Mayor?
You can have that.
Okay.
Yes.
Bill Gigray, city attorney. It depends with regards to the emergency exit that Councilman McPherson was talking about, how the plat notes and the legend read. If it is referenced as an easement or a right-of-way, and it's dedicated to the public and the dedication language in the plat, then the only way the city can divest its interest in it is through an abandonment and vacation process. If it's retained by the applicant and the owner of the property and is maintained by an HOA or otherwise, then it's not dedicated to the city. And then at some point, if the conditions require, then that could go back to the HOA. It would remain with the HOA, and the emergency exit could be eliminated. But it's going to depend on what language is on the plat as to what the status of that is.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Further questions?
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
Again, for the record, Troy Behunin. Just want to let you know that in the preliminary plat that the applicant has proposed, it does distinguish it as a temporary emergency access. There is no dedication of public right-of-way. We can, the council can condition specific language to be put on the plat if you're not satisfied with the temporary emergency access language. You're free to clarify that.
I think unless we, in my opinion anyway, unless we're going to ask that always remain an emergency access, I don't think we'd want to hold deed to it.
Mayor?
Yes.
I think the building permit process would make it to where that isn't necessary. We wouldn't issue a building permit on that until all the other issues were resolved. So it would really stay an unbuildable lot until the connectivity was met. So I think that would kind of take care of itself from our standpoint.
Okay. Okay. Further questions?
I have one, Mayor, but
sure.
Maybe it's addressed at you, Troy. On the northeast corner of this annexation, on page 48 of 107 of our computer, there's a green space. I can't tell the footage. And then Ardell stops. What is the green space there? Is that a public area from another subdivision?
Council Member Cardoza, for the record, Troy Buchanan, did you say page 48 of 107?
Yes, on 6A.
Or 139 of 287 in the overall packet, Troy, if that's easier.
I'm sorry?
139. Of 287 in the overall packet.
I'm not finding any kind of green.
It's purple in mine. It's not green.
There's real.
I think
green
it's a little background.
But that's
paint.
What like water mains or something. Or, I don't know what else it is because they're all over. If you look.
Come on. The one time my computer works.
We were thinking about hiring an IT guy just to follow you around.
I'm showing page 139 of 287 on the left corner.
Mayor, I believe, Mr. I could clarify what that is.
You want to? Yeah, sure.
This is what I'm looking at. Is that?
It's a common lot in Crimson Point, that little green spot right there?
Yeah.
It's a common lot in Crimson Point, phase one.
So their property would end right there on the northeast corner.
It comes up, as it had a 20-foot strip that comes up, and then this property cuts in.
Okay.
If you'd like to ask me on the record, I can tell you what it is.
Yeah.
Could we get a verbal description of what just transpired?
So I believe you're looking at the emergency access as it is shown on, page 48 of 107? Is that the area you were looking at in that corner?
It's the northeast corner of the blue box.
I don't have a blue box.
He's got a different color scheme going.
It's a different background. Okay.
Now I got different colors than everybody.
Yeah. So he is looking at the northeast corner where the emergency access was what he was explaining.
We get you a new computer, and it doesn't even have the right colors in it.
So what colors are we going to be on there here so we can coordinate?
I got nothing.
I guess I was wondering why that northeast corner couldn't be accessed over to Ardell if there was the accessibility of buying that little piece of land, and just it would incur having to move, I think it was lot 16 on that, but that would give you an exit or an egress off onto West Ardell, if it was possible.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know what they could do to negotiate for that. It looks like that would change the way they're doing their subdivision.
Right.
Yeah, I guess it's just going to that
some
lot.
Of the traffic is what I was thinking, and then I don't know if Tim could incorporate that into his subdivision in that section of land there. So. Just a thought.
Well, it wouldn't make good sense, but I think that's what Troy was alluding to, was that years ago when this was all split up, they didn't foresee that ever needing to happen, so they didn't. So now it would take acquisitions of lands and
Okay.
Anything further?
No.
Warren, how you doing over there?
Oh, I'm doing good. No, I just something I kind of want to bring up in discussion. It's not necessarily a question, but I think it's something that it's important we keep on our forefront is Exhibit B8, the school district was kind enough to let us incorporate that letter in here again. And enrollment already, High school's taken care of with the new high school. CUNA Middle has 13 students away from capacity. Crimson is fine on capacity because of that bond we were able to expand, which is great. Again, it's not something that I dwell over numbers in the head and start looking at this and say where we're at with capacity, if the district can even service that at that point, but it's not a concern with this development. I just think it's important as we look at these things that's on our forefront, because we're at capacity in middle schools and we have nothing planned for middle schools as of right now. So, but it's not something I need to.
Probably it's certainly worth mentioning. I'm really glad the school district has put some good comment in there so we can at least see where that's at.
Right, right.
I did actually, on a different note, talk to the school district about the 2% growth number. It looks like we have quite a few retired folks that are moving here, and younger people apparently are having less kids than they used to. So the numbers are different than what they used to be as number of people in homes and that type of thing. So that's why they're experiencing 2%, even though overall we're growing quicker than that.
Thanks for doing that.
Because that one seemed very odd to me.
The other thing I noticed on there, Mayor, their calculation is 0.65 students per household, which is the Ada County standard calculation. I wondered if CUNA holds to that calculation as a city. That would be interesting.
Okay, we can check that demographic, but I believe that CUNA actually is a little lower than the
lower than the 0.65.
But we'll check into that.
I must live in a rough neighborhood.
Yeah. You do.
You do. We know where you live.
Again, the numbers are great, and Mayor, I do appreciate you bringing that up and talking with Wendy on that. That really helps kind of clarify things. Well, demographic wise, we have the highest percentage of 24 to 35 per our population ratio, and so when Richard brings that up, it'd be interesting to find that out. Just
okay. Like that, so.
Anything further?
And we have kept the public hearing open so that we could call people up for questions. We're at that point now where it's deliberate some more or make some.
Are you good?
I'm good.
I mean,
we've heard all the testimony on record.
Okay.
Based on that, then, I move that we approve 19-08-AN annexation and 19-04-S preliminary plat and the findings of fact and conclusion of law in order of decision as presented in the packet and close the public hearing based on the approval from all of the applicable entities, staff reports, planning and zoning recommendation, and the compliance with the current comprehensive plan.
Second.
Motions have been made and seconded. Did you put in there the conditions on
L?
Planning and zoning.
As well as the planning and zoning's list of conditions.
And I'll hold my second.
All right. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? And that motion carries. Thank you very much. On to item 6B. This is a public hearing in consideration to approve ordinance number 2019-44, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of CUNA making certain findings purposes and ordinance enactment history, and repealing Section 20, Article A, Chapter 2, Title 4, CUNA City Code, and amending and redesignating Sections 21 through 38, Article A, Chapter 2 of Title 4, CUNA City Code, and amending Subsection 2 of Section 6, Chapter 1, Title 5, CUNA City Code, making a technical correction to the definition of open space, and amending Section 5, Chapter 5 of Title 5, CUNA City Code, making technical corrections regarding the general requirements of fence regulations, and repealing Section 4, Chapter 6, Title 5, CUNA City Code, and amending and redesignating Sections 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, and 9 of Chapter 6 of Title 5, CUNA City Code, and amending Sections 2, 4, 6, 10, 12, and 20, Chapter 17, Title 5 of CUNA City Code, making technical changes to design requirements and adding requirements for residential open space, and amending Section 2, Chapter 4 of Title 6, CUNA City Code, providing for a change in the text designation for definitions upon which city staff can rely, and making a technical correction regarding the measurement of fence height and location of fencing, and providing a severability clause, and directing the city clerk, and providing an effective date. So we will begin this. We have Wendy Howell and Bobby Withrow, Parks Director. Whoever wants to go first.
I will go first, Mayor. Mayor, Council, Wendy Howell for the record, P.O. Box 13, CUNA. The proposed code revision clarifies where the measurement of the height of the fence is taken from. The proposed code states all fences shall be measured from and along the finished grade of the property at the location the fences are constructed. Yeah. This has been a debated issue at times during construction, and if approved, will provide clear directions to all. And in the definition for open space, I do have a couple of additions to it. So I'll read the definition of open space. An area substantially open to sky, which may be on the same lot with a building. The area may include, along with the natural environmental features, water areas, swimming pools, and tennis courts, and other recreational facilities that the Planning and Zoning Commission deems permissible. Streets, and then if you could add the word private, parking areas, structures for habitation, and buffer areas, and then add along classified roads, in caps, and the like shall not be included. And then I'll turn it over to Bobby Withrow, Parks and Rec Director, to present the open space.
Mayor, Council, for the record, Bobby Withrow, P.O. Box 13, CUNA, Idaho. Coming before you tonight are the new proposed open space requirements for new developments wanting to come into the city. City code already has approved open space requirements that, when enforced properly, it would encumber a majority of the development. Staff immediately started working on a tiered approach to the open space requirements and came up with a percentage of acres per households. Reviewing many subdivisions that were already established or at the beginning process of coming into the city, we came up with this formula. The comprehensive plan calls for a goal of 1 acre per 80 people, and this will get us there. Since 2017, 68% of the preliminary plats, that's 15 of 22, have met or exceeded the proposed requirements that we're bringing forward tonight, the largest being 202 acres. This is not including PUDs. City Council, Planning and Zoning Commission, schools, and youth groups have all expressed a need for more open space in the community. The ordinance allows for many forms of open space to be considered in the calculation, like pathways along canals, tennis courts, school sites, and other recreational facilities. With this ordinance, we are asking developers to invest in our community by helping improve community health and wellness, improve connectivity within the city, and help boost economic development. This investment will strengthen the overall value and marketability of their project. Open space provides recreational areas for residents and helps to enhance the beauty and environmental quality of neighborhoods. Thank you.
I have one item on the fencing. I just wanted to clarify that the actual code is going to read that fence height shall be measured from the base of the fence to the highest point.
Okay. Okay, good. This is a public hearing. Is there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign up to testify who wishes to do so? Okay. Not sure exactly what to do with this, but apparently someone thinks they're pulling a funny. I have a lot of names here, none of which are actually names, and no address. I'm assuming that someone wants extra time for testimony, and instead of asking for that, is mocking the council. So, I guess I will ask for legal's comment on that. I'll bring the sheet over and show them to you.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, what I'm aware of is I believe there was some email traffic between Mr. Bauer, who is here, who I believe represents Mr. Eck, whose name appears on this sign-up sheet, where he was inquiring of the city clerk Chris Engels replied that we have a rule under administrative rules for hearings that there's 3 minutes allowed per person who wishes to address the council, that there is a procedure under the administrative hearing provisions of the code that a request could be or a motion could be made to extend for additional time, and that that would take a motion, and then the council would have to vote one half plus one of the council under the rule in order to approve the motion. So in my mind, if Mr. Bauer, on behalf of Mr. Eck, who wishes to address the council on this matter, would make that motion and state the basis and reason for the motion and maybe clarify what this is that you handed me, then the council consider whether there's merit to that, and then you could ask for a vote on the motion and take care of it at that point. And I think they need to request, if they're going to ask that the rules be suspended, which is the motion, what amount of time they're requiring and what they want to do, and then whether that addresses any of this or not. And I would, just for purpose of the record, I think the clerk gave Mr. Bauer the correct information about the code and the rules.
Okay, did staff have any other? Okay. So we'll go ahead and open the public hearing. First up, we have Jeff Bauer, 601 West Bannock, Boise, Idaho. If you would come up, state your name and address for the record.
Mayor Stewart, council members, Jeff Bauer, 601 West Bannock. We meant no disrespect on the list. I am here, before I start my substantive testimony, to make a motion under 1-6-8 D and O of your code. As you know, public gets 3 minutes to testify per person. Those 17 names on that list are 17 LLCs owned by Mr. Eck that collectively own approximately 1,000 acres in the city of Cuna. This ordinance, particularly the open space, has very large ramifications for those 1,000 acres. So tonight we're asking you to grant Mr. Eck 9 minutes to speak. Ms. Sofro and myself will cede our time in opposition. Mr. Eck prepared some slides and testimony, a narrative. We can read his narrative, but I think it'll be clunky. If you grant this motion, it'll be just him. I think you'll get better testimony, more clarity, and you can ask him any questions. And again, no disrespect on the list.
I certainly take that as disrespect.
I apologize.
You're making a mockery of this council and our procedures.
I apologize, Mr. Mayor. I did speak to the clerk beforehand and the city attorney and notified him that that's what we would be doing. So I do apologize.
Okay, so Mr. Eck is going to ask for the extra time, or are you doing that now?
I'm doing that now, Mr. Mayor.
Mayor and members of the council, the motion that he's made under the city ordinance requires a vote of one half plus one of the full council. So that would mean all three council would have to approve this, even though you have one absent council member. That's in the ordinance. Just so you understand what an approval takes.
Is there any time limit specified for time?
It's a suspension of the rule, so I think that the moving party has to define what it is, how much time they want. So they're letting you know how you're going to suspend the rule. So they have to frame the question, okay. And then you would vote on that.
Okay. So they have asked for 9 minutes for Mr. Eck. That would require a motion and a vote from council.
I think you can entertain the motion has been made by the party here.
And okay.
You can vote on the motion.
Okay.
Could we make the motion applicable to all present? Well, you vote on one motion at a time and go from there. Or if you will entertain an amendment of the motion, then you could articulate to the party that's making the motion what you would entertain and support and see if they're willing to modify the motion to meet that.
I just wondered if we were giving them additional time, if the general public could be allowed the same amount of time.
I think you could grant the motion, and then you could move as a council member to suspend the rules for everyone else who wishes to testify to grant the same relief.
Would that be fair to all in the room then?
I would say it would be. It could be.
Okay. Just a suggestion, Mayor.
So then are all the other 17 names coming off of here? Because that seems ridiculous to give more time for one when they're going to keep coming at us here. I don't understand what it is I don't get the game.
Mr. Mayor, there is no game. I would have 3 minutes to testify. Ms. Sofro would have 3 minutes to testify. Mr. Eck would have 3 minutes to testify. We're simply asking you to consolidate that. And I apologize that it's taking this long to do that.
So wait, you said originally you wanted 9 minutes for Mr. Eck, 3 for each of you.
Nope.
We're no, just 3, time. 3, 3. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Mayor. Just for the convenience of council, I'd like to read the code that's been referenced from the clerk's office to Mr. Bauer. That is section 168, and then specifically O and E, which is He lays out the time frame, which is 15 minutes for staff report, 10 minutes for applicant, 3 minutes for testimony, 10 minutes for rebuttal. That's the same standard we've applied to all development, all public hearings. We've not had a modification of that. In section O is where it says that the body may suspend or amend any one or more of these rules by vote of one half plus one of the full body, and the presiding chairman shall have the authority to interpret and apply the foregoing rules. An appeal of such interpretation or application may be made to the city council, which will act on such appeal as expeditiously as it can. Appeals during a council meeting may be decided during the public hearing wherein the question arises, or may be decided at a later date at the council's discretion. So that encompasses all of it, which includes any appeals, but it does give the authority to council under your direction that the rules can be modified or changed.
Okay.
I guess my only argument, Mayor, would be if there's anybody here from the public, that they be allowed equal representation. If we make an exception to one, that it be extended to all. So.
Okay. I think anyone can make that same request.
I guess my thought is we have the city code and we've held to these standards in these times as long as I can remember, and it's something that when we have something like this, they're given 3 minutes for a reason. We don't, you know, this really just opens the door for us to every single public hearing suspend this code. The public is now aware that there's this code that even exists to say, we need to suspend this. I have more than 3 minutes of stuff I have to talk about. So that's kind of the concern, is what precedent do we set when we have a public hearing and all of a sudden, instead of just the general public on this ordinance, we've got someone requesting to extend this time because there's a lot of information they want to talk about. Well, that could very easily become a precedent in the case of, why now? And that's my only concern. But you know, if there's certainly more to it, please speak.
Mayor Steer, it was our intention to save time with this tonight. So, I apologize for doing this, but I'm just going to withdraw this request. I'll start to read Tim's narrative, and we'll swap out. I'm sorry to do that to you. I thought this would be more straightforward. I apologize.
Okay.
All right, but I do have some materials I want to hand out.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Can I get my 3 minutes, please?
Yes.
Mayor Steer, council members, Jeff Bauer, 601 West Bannock. Again, reading Mr. X's narrative. We're here tonight to address the open space requirements in the draft ordinance. Mr. X fully supports the city implementing open space requirements that will benefit the city and its residents. And he does not believe this ordinance benefits either as written. On February 5th, CUNA adopted Ordinance 2019-04. This ordinance changed the allowed uses in the C1 zone. You saw me a lot around that time, if you'll recall. The key issue at that time was what was allowed in the commercial zone, and we had a lot of hearings about residential use, particularly multifamily, in the C1. In addition to the multifamily use in C1, that ordinance implemented your first open space requirement, and it said, quote, a minimum of 5% usable open space per 50 dwelling units is required in residential developments. Mr. Winthrow referenced that in his opening tonight. That does not work. As soon as you get to 500 units, you're at 50% open space. No one wanted that, so we're here tonight to figure out what we're going to do to replace it. This is a tiered approach, and if you look at page 228 of your packet, it shows what the tiers are. We've tried to summarize that for you as well on page one with that Excel spreadsheet. This ordinance is the second attempt. Earlier in June of this year, P&Z heard an ordinance amendment to change your open space requirement. Due to some ambiguity in the text, that was rejected and it never made it to this council. Tonight is the second attempt by the city to overhaul the open space calculation. The proposed formula requires increased open space with no cap as proposed projects add more units. As a result, there becomes an outrageous amount of open space required for larger projects. So this ordinance does treat smaller projects different than larger projects, or larger landowners different than smaller landowners. The variation is huge. A small project could require only 3% open space, whereas a large project would require 24% open space. And again, the whole proposed table is on page 228 of your packet as well. For comparison, briefly, Meridian only requires 5% open space for large lot development. That's any lot over 16,000 square feet, and 10% for all other development. So you'd be 140% greater than that. Mr. Eck, again, owning approximately 1,000 acres in the city, is curious how the plan or the formula was developed. When the city updated the comp plan, there was over a year of studies, surveys, public input, business input, developer input, workshops, etc. He believes that the open space requirement is just as significant of a decision, and yet there was no involvement with any of the community, specifically none of the owners of land that might be developed were involved. To Mr. X's knowledge, there was no economic study.
Before I start, I first want to apologize. We had no intent for that sign-up sheet to be taken in the wrong direction. I just wanted you to realize the number of entities that I'm representing here tonight, my own and others that have asked me to speak this narrative on their behalf. Anyway, there was no disrespect intended. I just wanted you to see the how many people I'm representing and we were asking for the excess time. So I'll continue where Mr. Bauer left off. To my knowledge, there was no economic study completed to understand the effects of the proposed open space calculations. This needs to be studied because it will have significant impact on the economics of the city and the cost of homeownership in CUNA. Requiring such large areas of open space will dramatically increase the price of building lots in the city. I estimate up to 60% or $40,000 to $60,000. This is due to the higher cost of land resulting from the total land cost being applied only to the land receiving dwellings. Running utilities through and around open space and developer costs to install open space landscaping. If a project requires 24% open space, my calculates show home prices in such a development could be as much as $200,000 higher for the same product. Prices will exceed Meridian, maybe Eagle and Boise. An economic study is also important because this open space ordinance will cost homeowners millions of dollars in additional HOA assessments to maintain these large areas of open space. Lastly, this ordinance will dramatically increase the city's tax revenue because common area and open space are not assessed by the Ada County. Thus, in a 2,000-unit development, approximately one-quarter of the area would not generate tax revenue for the city. The proposed ordinance is also biased against large developments of landowners. The city's ordinance should treat landowners equally and fairly. The proposal also creates more open space for less dense projects, which makes no sense. As projects get denser, there should be more open space. Meridian's code recognizes this. On the screen, it's actually on my exhibits, which I'll finish this and I'll come back to the exhibits. Are seven examples showing bias against larger, lower-density developments. A 2,000-lot subdivision on 640 acres would result in 3.125 DUGA and require 153.6 acres open space. That's on 1A. A 2,000-lot subdivision on 500 acres would result in 4 DUGA and require 120 acres of open space.
A 2,000-lot subdivision on 333.33 acres would result in 60 UGA and require 80 acres of open space. A 2,000-lot subdivision on 250 acres would result in 8 DUGA and require 60 acres of open space. A 2,000-lot subdivision on 200 acres would result in 10 DUGA and require 48. So you can see the same number of homes, and it runs from 153 to 48 acres. Five scenarios. The proposed ordinance encourages higher density and smaller lots. It also encourages piecemeal development to avoid higher open space thresholds. Example of this bias against larger plats are shown on the next slide. These examples are based on a square mile. A square mile and a single plat at 6 DUGA will generate 3,840 lots and require 247.80 acres of open space. Yes, that's 38.72% in an acre. A square mile developed in 32 plats of 20 at 60 UGA, same lots, 3840, 30.08 acres of open space. A square mile developed in 16 plats of 40 acres each at 60 UGA will generate 3,840. We'll jump to the smallest one. A square mile developed in 32 plats of 20 acres each at 4 DUGA will generate 2,560 lots and require 19.2 acres of open space. How do we jump from 19.2 to 247 in the same square mile? I'll let Ms. Sopho finish the rest.
I'm Brittany Sopho, 1857 West Oak Campden Drive. Staff memo justifies the calculations to satisfy goals in the comprehensive plan. First, the comp plan is only a guide. Second, goal 2B of the comprehensive plan has a goal of 1 acre of parks and public gathering space per 80 residents and recognizes the park impact fee introduced in August of 2016 to acquire, improve, and maintain parks to achieve this goal. As a comparison, Eagle requires 1 acre per 303 residents, and Meridian requires 1 acre per 329 residents. Why would CUNA need 411% more than Meridian and 378% more than Eagle? Residential open space is not public parks. All of this open space, if owned and maintained by an HOA, will be private for the exclusive use of the members. The general public will not be allowed to access or use this land. The city could acquire ownership, but it would also get the maintenance costs. What would it cost the taxpayers to maintain this enormous amount of open space? I would believe the maintenance of parks conceivably as large as 247.8 acres per square mile would bankrupt the city. If it would bankrupt a city, what would it do to an HOA? An HOA with an annual assessment of $400 per year would see their assessments go up to $400 per month if they had to maintain this open space. As mentioned earlier, we are in favor of a reasonable open space plan. I respectfully request that the City Council reject the ordinance and instruct staff to reassess the open space calculations. I would submit that this process should include public involvement from the residents, developmental community, and all landowners. It should also include an economic study to obtain an understanding of the cost to landowners, the cost to developers, the cost to the HOAs, and the loss of tax revenue for the city, then formulate an open space plan accordingly. Thank you.
Okay, questions for any of those three?
We wanted to have slides up, but we modified these, and it was too late to get them in here for the presentation. So I was, unfortunately, just brought them to you on 11 by 17. I've tried to identify, like on sheet, well, the first page is the graph of the open space requirements up to 24% on 2000.
So, can I clarify, what are we doing now?
Oh, I just wonder.
You guys are just going to keep rotating, or what have we got going here?
He still has some minutes left.
No, she has time left.
You want to turn
this? No, go ahead.
No, he doesn't have time left.
Okay.
You don't have time left.
Okay,
she has time left.
Okay. Then I'll just stand for questions.
Questions? No questions. All right, next, and I don't know how I'm going to do this, Justin Blackstock.
He got sick and had to leave. I'm sorry.
Water Ed Farm. Uh,
Dave Jorgensen. Yes, sir.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Dave Jorgensen. I am here representing the Building Contractors Association of Southwestern Idaho. I'm also a local land developer. I've developed for over the last 20 years in most of the cities across the Treasure Valley. A couple of comments. One, I just want to make reference to the letter that was submitted on behalf of the BCA. They would have submitted it sooner. However, they their board meeting was Thursday night, so they couldn't get it until your packet Friday morning, so it was submitted Friday for your reference.
Okay.
It's my experience in the land development business that you want to have adequate and the proper amount of open space. The challenge is what is that amount? I have not done any coordination with Mr. Eck and his team. I saw some of their numbers, and I know it's very, very thorough, but I'm coming at it from really a different approach, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I am concerned about too much open space, and specifically in the larger type developments where if the HOA dues are too high, it's been my experience that as soon as the developer leaves, one of the first actions of business is that the residents who become in charge of the HOA, they will start slashing the maintenance of the common areas so they can afford the HOA, the budget itself. Typically 80 to 85%. Depending upon the level of amenities, more or less, but about 80 to 85% of the HOA budget is based on landscape maintenance. Could be a little less if you have a swimming pool, could be a little bit more if you don't. That's kind of the range. I've actually sat on committees with the City of Meridian and with City of Eagle and helped draft their open space ordinances. I don't know where the city is your history. I really don't know, but I'm here to offer my help if you'd like my help to work with your staff. I've talked to Bobby. I actually really appreciate the approach, as he's explained it to me. I really do appreciate if you have a little bit higher density, you need a little higher amount of open space in development. If you have lower density, frankly, the bigger the backyard, maybe a little less open space is needed throughout the common area of the development, at least as far as what's required. If the developer wants to put more in, I guess that's their choice, but that's been my experience over the nearly 25 years of doing this. And so I often see cities craft their open space ordinances based on densities, based on zoning or those types of things. I also recognize the city's trying to achieve a decision. And so the bottom line, my primary concern is when you're striving for those larger numbers of lots where you have that over 20% open space as a requirement, that's a pretty big number. Likewise, 3% seems pretty small to me, frankly. If that's what the city wants, we support that. But so I'm standing here offering my support to your goals and your objectives, and if you so desire to pull this back and work in a collaborative effort, I'm here to support you in that effort. I'll stand for any questions.
Question. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Is there anybody who signed up here and I didn't get called out? Is there anybody who wishes to testify who isn't? Yes, sir. Did you sign up or no?
I'm happy to.
Okay.
So again, for the record, Josh Beach, business addresses.
Thank you.
So again, for the record, Josh Beach, business address is 4824 West Fairview. So most of the discussion so far this evening has been relating to open space, and I echo those concerns, mostly because having worked as a planner for the last 10 or 12 years, the getting input from the stakeholders is crucial in making sure that we're not making a mistake when we're writing the ordinance kind of in a bubble. So I will reference that as well as talk about a couple other spots in this ordinance where I feel like input would need to be received from some other agencies, you know, specifically relating to 6-4-2 requiring under required public improvements. Bicycle lanes specifically is not specific enough that we know on what street sections a bike lane would be required. Is that local streets? Is it all local streets? Is it collector streets? Is it arterial streets? I mean, it's so again, I'm pulling this back somewhat to get some additional input from stakeholders is going to go a long way in getting developers and the ordinance where it needs to be so that some of these things are actually achievable. So I guess that's really all I had to say. Okay. Sit down unless you have any questions.
Question? No, thank you. All right, so I have a couple of other letters to read in. Were you representing Dan Richter, or should I read his letter in?
Mr. Mayor, to be very clear, yes. I'm the Government Affairs Representative for the BCA Southwestern Idaho.
Okay.
And helped author that letter, and Dan signed it.
Okay. So that will serve as this?
You do not need to reread it. I referenced the HOA dues concerns. So thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Next, we have a letter from Tim Gordon. Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. My name is Timothy Gordon, and I live at 1206 North Black Cat Road, Kuna, Idaho, 83634. I want to address the open space draft ordinance before you tonight. First of all, I would like to state that I fully support open space and parks and the value they bring to our community. I have read Timek's testimony that he has submitted with regard to the open space ordinance being considered tonight. Given the detail in his testimony, I think it would be prudent to table the open space ordinance and take a second look at the issues he has addressed in his testimony. Thank you very much for your consideration of my thoughts and input. Sincerely, Tim Gordon. Next, I have to whom it may concern. My name is Don Newell, the developer of the Kuna Marketplace and Ashton Estates in Kuna. I have developed and built in many markets from Denver, Colorado, Las Vegas, Nevada, Salt Lake, and Park City, Utah, and the Inland Empire, Riverside County, California. I must say the proposed open space requirement being considered by council tonight is the most aggressive and, quite frankly, egregious I can remember. Has proper thought gone into the ramifications of this policy if enforced? Are Kuna Park fees adequate? What will happen to HOA dues and communities affected by this? Aren't these concerns of the city? I believe the stakeholders, like the city, would welcome a vetting and dialogue of this proposed policy prior to its implementation. Regards, Don Newell. And that is all of the public testimony. I do have a letter submitted by Councilmember Ruben van der Haar. If council is ready for your thoughts to be shared.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Bobby, could you just explain to us one more time how you came up with these percentage numbers? Like, what was that process?
Councilman Christensen and Mayor, Council. We actually have a rebuttal. Can we do that first? Or
that would probably be better, actually. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Good evening, council members and Mr. Mayor. For the record, Troy Buchanan. So earlier this year, the council approved
a citywide goal of 1 acre of usable open space per 80 people in the city. But it's important to remember it's a citywide goal. We have not had a goal in the city for open space per for anything for a long, for as long as I can remember. There's never been a goal stated, but that goal was approved by the council earlier this year to provide 80 people with 1 acre of land for usable space. As Bobby mentioned, we have heard repeated requests from citizens, from the CUNA school district, from the sporting groups, from the commission, and from this council for more open space for a number of years. That's one of the main concerns that the citizens bring to planning and zoning commissions and also to this body, is that where are the kids going to play? Where are things going to happen? Where's the connectivity between subdivisions? From everything from sporting events to connectivity and pedestrians, safe routes to school for the children. That's what this proposal is it's a response to all of these requests from all of these different groups, that there is more adequate space provided. If we maintain the goal, or if we maintain the status quo, we'll never reach that goal of 1 acre for 80 people. And with CUNA having the lowest average age in the state of Idaho, that's going to bring a lot more kids. So we're already behind in providing open space for sporting events and things like that. One of the things that we really tried to focus on is that we're not just asking that this be provided, improved, and dedicated to the city. There's a reimbursement program. If the requirements of the Parks and Rec Code for open space is met, then, and if it is dedicated to the city of CUNA, then the HOA would not be responsible for the cost of maintaining the space. It would be the city's responsibility for taking care of those if they meet those requirements. And I just reconfirmed with Bobby Withrow, who's the director of Parks and Rec, and the city is able to provide the same services that the citizens expect over these green spaces at a much lower cost. It is our opinion, or at least it's Parks and Rec's opinion, and we support it, that we can maintain these areas as they are provided. One of the chief complaints that we've had is open spaces being closed off. We have a wonderful creek, and we have one particular subdivision, and they have actually put up a sign that said, keep out. If you're not an HOA member, stay out of here. And so it does limit access, and that really is one of the biggest reasons why we're trying to do this. We're trying to make sure that there is connectivity throughout these places and from subdivision to subdivision and promote a healthy lifestyle. That's what we're really after. But it's not purely at a cost of, hey, developer, give us everything. It's let's both achieve these goals. You get an amenity within your subdivision. You're promoting that connectivity. You're promoting that activity. You're providing safe routes to school, all of these things. And if you meet the goals of the Parks and Rec Department reimbursement program, then there's a reimbursement. Or there's reimbursement. There is a credit for providing those facilities and then dedicating to them to the city. Otherwise, what happens is homes, when they are built, they are charged $939, and that would be on the homeowners. So the homeowners would then get that pass-through cost because the developers, that's what they would do, is they would pass that cost through, just like all the other building permits, building permit fees. In the last 3 years, staff has compiled a list of subdivisions in the last 3 years where we have found that with the exception of one particular subdivision, which was 202 acres, every other subdivision that has been approved doesn't even come close to 160 acres. So what staff would like to do is just point out that there's a number of these subdivisions where in the last 3 years they already meet this expectation. I believe Bobby mentioned it in his testimony that 15 of the last 21 that we focused on, they meet that. 66% of the subdivisions that have come before you for your approval already meet that, this proposed legislation. So in order to get a more accurate comparable for apples to apples, instead of taking a square mile, 640 acres, which is one square mile, we've only seen one project in the history of all applications for CUNA that has reached that threshold. There is one other that will be provided that will come before this body soon. But what we did is we took this list that are you handing out the list? Yeah. Okay, I'll get to that. So what we did is we took these 21 subdivisions and we found that the bulk of our subdivisions don't even reach 160 acres. So what we did is instead of going one square mile, which has happened once in the history of CUNA, let's reduce it down to something that's probably more doable. So what we did, in order to compare apples to apples, we've put this exhibit together for you. It's called the Open Space Requirements Across Even Acreage that has just now been handed out to the clerk and the council. So if you take, the only way to get a true comparison is to compare the same acreage with different zones. That's the only way to actually find out what the impact is. So at 160 acres for an R2, you likely could get 320 homes, which would then require 16.56 acres of open space or 10.35%. That brings an estimated population with the CUNA-specific population growth of 982 people. So the comp plan goal would then be met. It would be one acre to 59 residents, but that's in an R2. The same 160 acres is an R4. With an R4 would be 640 homes, 13.20%, or 21.12 acres of open space. That would have an estimated population of 1,964 people, and the comp plan goal, it would be 1 acre to every 93 people. Same 160 acres with an R6 would bring 960 homes, likely, 16% open space, 25.6 acres of open space, an estimated population increase of 2,947 people. The comp plan goal would not be met. That would be 1 acre for every 115 people. Same 160 acres with an R8, 1,280 homes, 18.40% open space, 29.44 acres of open space, estimated population of 3,930. The comp plan goal would not be met at 1 acre per 133 people. So while it does appear like the open space is heavy as the project grows, and it's it's a lot smaller for smaller developments, what staff has found is that there's actually a sweet spot. We have found that by and large 9 out of 10 applications that come into the city of CUNA are between 151 homes and 450 homes. By and large, that is what we have found, and that is a historical data. That is not something that we have actually just thrown together. That is historical data. And so with that, where's that? That means on average there would be about 10 or 11% open space if you take that average with those numbers. If the city council decides that they only want to take a straight across approach and provide 10% open space across the board, then the goal of 1 acre for 80 people will never be met. Never. It will never be met citywide. Now, it would be met for a development, but it would not be met citywide. It's interesting to see, to hear tonight. I did not know this until tonight. It was testified earlier that Eagle has 1 acre for 330 people, but yet they require the highest open space in the valley right now. They require 15% usable.
Did you want to go ahead and ask your question now?
I think you answered it for me, Troy. Thank you for speaking to all that detail there. So I wanted to make sure. I mean, I know staff does their due diligence time and time again, so I just wanted to kind of reiterate in my head the comfort level as to how these numbers were come across and the thought put into that. So I do appreciate the staff for showing us this, and as well as the chart breakdown that we got from Mr. Bauer there. So I don't have any questions.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and read in Brianna's comment. She says, I apologize for missing this meeting due to illness. Thank you for letting me submit some written comments to be read into the record in my absence. I am concerned that the standards proposed for smaller unit developments do not seem to hit our 1 acre per 80 resident standard, while those proposed for much larger developments exceed this standard, sometimes coming close to doubling it. This can have several unwanted impacts. First, we appear to be incentivizing smaller developments, which will likely have a smaller open space areas, which would remain the property of the HOAs and not be open for community use. Second, we can't control whether developers pursue large or small projects. So if we've skewed the open space requirements so that large-scale projects make up for the lesser requirements for small-scale projects, we run the risk of having an overall impact of not meeting our 1 acre per 80 residents goal. As noted on page 2 of the memo in your packet, the ordinance amendment implemented earlier this year had the problem of creating not enough open space in some developments and too much in others. I am concerned with what's proposed will replicate that problem. In light of some of the expressed concerns with the proposed changes to the open space requirements and the fact I have questions about whether the current proposal effectively meets our stated goal of 1 acre per 80 residents, I propose we table the section of this ordinance dealing with open space. I suggest we schedule a workshop so that we can more fully explore the city's goals and how various approaches might meet those goals and strengths and weaknesses of each approach, just as there was already an attempt to revise the open space requirements, which was ultimately found unworkable. We need to look at this more closely so we can get it right and not have to continually revisit the issue. The portions of the ordinance I recommend tabling are 5-1-6-2 and 5-17-12. And then she also has a couple of edits. One is an edit for 6B, page 26 of 63, section I2B. It reads, height of a fence waiver shall only be considered when the grade between two lots have a difference of 2 feet or more and is on the request is for the lower of the two properties.
It should instead read, height of fence waiver shall only be considered when the grade between two lots has a difference of 2 feet or more and the request is made by the owner of the lower of the two properties. And then there is an edit for 6B, page 30 of 63. Section D, there should be a comma after the word burlapped. Thank you, Brianna. I knew Brianna would show. And section E, there should be a comma after the word feet and a comma after the word burlapped. And that concludes Councilmember Boobin van der Haar's comments. So, question. So looking at some of these larger ones here, if we did have a 640-acre development, what would be the odds it would come under this? I mean, wouldn't normally something that large come under a PUD rather than and whoever can answer that?
That's a good question, Mr. Mayor. We went back through all of the applications that we could and focused primarily on the last 3 years, but we have used historical staff knowledge and also the files and discovered that we've only had one that reaches that size of a project. I mean, that's a huge undertaking. The prospect is always there, but there's fewer and fewer large parcels where there's just that much land under one ownership that's contiguous to each other. I think that there's plenty of examples throughout the city where there's a number of large landowners, but their property just isn't right next to each other. Now, there are a couple of cases where that does happen, but to answer your question, something like that, that's kind of the goal of this is to encourage PUDs, and perhaps we need to revisit our PUD ordinance and make some modifications. But that's kind of the goal. The goal isn't just to stick it to anybody, especially the homeowners. We're trying to promote something that's much larger than just an open space. We're trying to encourage a lifestyle. We're trying to encourage the developers to provide these open spaces that are useful, that the city can rely on, the citizens can rely on. But PUDs, something this size, that's what happened last year. I mean, we have the recent annexation of Falcon Crest. It was 1,000 acres, but it was a PUD. And the requirement is 10% usable open space. They're going to be providing much more than that.
What do you think the odds would be of a developer platting for that all at once, even if it was...
Never happened. You would never see 640 acres platted at one time.
Okay.
There would be multiple phases, but not at one time.
So I think my next question would be for Bobby. The smaller developments with the 3%, can you give me a history on what that would be?
So the mayor, council, the 3%. When we were looking at this, we did kind of reverse engineer some of it. So we did find a couple subdivisions we liked that showed the percentage that we wanted to see in open space, and we went forward and backwards from that. We were actually at 2.5% on the developments under 100 or less. That one's really open for discussion. If council thinks that needs to be raised for those smaller ones, then by all means, we can do that.
Okay. Yes.
Mayor, if I could have the floor. I don't know who to address this to. But on page 14 of 63, it says, the CUNA City Council, pursuant to public notice, as required by law, held a public hearing on October 23rd and October 30th. Evidently, I wasn't there if it was a public meeting.
That was with the Planning and Zoning Commission. That was the notifications that were done.
But was there a public notice on October 8th?
October 8th was the Planning and Zoning hearing. October 23rd was one of the notifications in the paper, and October 30th was the second notification in the paper for the City Council public hearing.
Okay. Has there been open public discussion on this legislature that was open to the public, that they were notified, most of the developers in our community?
We have discussed it in pre-plats, and we have handed out to some of the planners, engineers, representatives a copy of the proposal.
Did any of them return any kind of information or requests or input as to this ordinance?
It's a good question, Councilmember Cardoza. This is Troy Buchanan, for the record. We did have a number of discussions with a number of developers, and I believe the letters that you have in your packets tonight for this ordinance request, I think that reflects their comments and the and their concerns with things as they are proposed. But no, we've not received anything else in addition to what you have in your packet.
Given how much work you put into this, and I totally appreciate what the city has done, do you feel that this should be opened back up for public testimony on a private meeting with builders, developers, the Home Builders Association? It's consequential to all of them as much as us that there be coordination. There seems to be some animosity out there in the building trades. Do you think a meeting, an open meeting between planning and zoning and the building or the planning and zoning department would relieve some of this?
Councilmember Cardoza, that's a good question. Troy Buchanan for the record. I think that staff will do whatever council directs us to do. I guess one would just have to consider, you know, that we would just come at an impasse at that meeting as well. Perhaps a workshop with council would work, where we can have an open discussion. But I don't know what the council would like to do in terms of stakeholders or anything like that.
Well, just tonight, I've got a little confused in what the city has presented and what the development community has presented. So there seems to be maybe some arbitration between both organizations. So I don't know what the rest of the council feels. So
there's everything in me is... I mean, the numbers that both sides have said and presented really align and make sense with what the city's trying to achieve, what the developers' concerns are. And I think the amount of time and effort that the staff has put together, working together, and the data they've presented really is kind of squared away exactly where the city's coming from and why. And... looking at that, it's clear to me that they have, when they were looking at this and doing those numbers, they have the clear idea as to what they envision that portion of open space in the comprehension plan has to state in this ordinance and what they want to do with that. The fact that they looked back on everything CUNA has done and what CUNA in the future looks like they're going to do and everything aligns with the numbers they've put together, with an outlier or two, which will happen every time on things, tells me that these numbers that they've put together and the percentages that they have aligned with this really comes on par with what the city's ultimate goal is with open space. And I think opening it up to just another workshop, the data set's not going to change on how they got to these numbers or why they got to these numbers. So I don't know what benefit it would have to try and elaborate and expand on it even more.
Yeah, I think kind of in my opinion, I think they've spent a lot of time and effort on this. I guess my only question would be if staff is comfortable with that 3% number on the small one. That's the only one one that Brianna had mentioned, and I'm not sure on that one, but the rest of it makes sense and seems to fall in line with what the comprehensive plan has called for and addresses some of the issues that we've heard over the past few months. You want to go ahead and comment on the
can you repeat the question, please? Sorry.
Mostly the only question that I have in my mind yet is the 3% piece on the small development.
Mayor, Council, that one's been tricky for us too. We could move it up to 4% and just keep going with our table and then actually cap it at 1,500. In any houses after 1,500, it'll still be the 20%. So that way there won't be any 24% developments.
And really, I'm just questioning, are you comfortable with 3%? If you are, then that's...
Yeah, I'm comfortable with 3%.
Okay. Okay.
Greg?
Well, several things. This is a lot to, read our numbers. Numbers presented by opposition of this ordinance. I tried crunching numbers on what my subdivision is based on houses, amount of ground, HOA dues, what it costs us to maintain it, and all good factors when looking at all this, because we certainly don't want a bunch of property turned over to us that now other taxpayers have to help pay for. So. I guess I don't really, it's been brought up by both sides. I don't really care, I guess, what Meridian or Eagle has for open space or this or that. I guess this is kind of the city's vision of what we need, whether it's right or wrong in everyone's eyes. But Rich kind of was on the motion to table something, and Brianna said something about tabling part of it in her request as well. To me, it sounds like at least, well, Brianna's not here, so she doesn't really count, but she will definitely have input on it, I'm sure, and be listening to the minutes as soon as they're put online. But I'm just not sure. I don't know. I'm hesitant on part of it, but I'm in full support of part of it as well. So where you sit, Rich.
Do I have a 3-minute rebuttal here, Mayor? I guess where I'm coming from is I haven't seen this much input from the community, be it maybe not the direct community, but the building community. It shows interest in our open space. The mayor himself has tried to keep an open door policy here and a very open philosophy. Before I would want to vote on something like this, I would like a little more input from the community, whether it changes the planning and zoning direction and Bobby with the parks, but maybe if we had a little more input, there might be some fine-tuning that we could do on this that would bring everybody into some congenial matter. We have to work with developers to provide the facilities, but we have an obligation to the city and the citizens. So there's got to be a happy medium. It sounds like, and I'm not holding anybody accountable, but it sounds like the building facilities weren't aware of this, and maybe it might be their fault more than the city's, but in retrospect, the city should at least listen to their arguments is what I'm trying to argue. It's we want to keep a very open city, so.
I guess if I could I guess just a quick follow-up to that. It goes back to planning and zoning, offering that up with developers they have talked to, and we got their argument, we got their side of things. I don't know what more would come of opening the door open again to just having more back and forth would do.
But I'm not sure, why are we getting all these letters from the homeowners, which the Builders Association, from Don Newell, from Tim Gordon, and of course Tim Eck. It sounds like they still have some argument as to the open space, whether how flexible we should be on it is probably open to the city and the council and the planning and zoning directors, but I just feel that we have an obligation to listen to the public.
And I guess that's where I get confused with what you're saying, being as we have already received input from that community, the public side of it.
But have we? If we're receiving letters now, evidently we haven't fully received the information that we maybe should have had.
I guess in my mind, I mean, I think that so that they've been for a while here presenting these things as things come up in their meetings and getting it out there. And in the end, I mean, it's a matter of one group putting together numbers and another group putting together numbers, and then you get to pick whichever numbers you want to, whichever ones you want to go with.
I mean,
some of these things that say, well, we're going to build less houses, which is going to be less tax revenue for the city, I don't think that anybody sitting up here has made any decisions based on what tax revenue the city gets other than
sure. It
obviously has to pay for itself, but I don't think we ever look for more and more. I think the Parks Department has done a really great job with, as we get more parks, they take care of the properties, and I think in the end, this is about the input that we received during the comp plan revision from the public, the things that the people commented on, the things that were mentioned in those meetings, and that's where these came from. Our formula is going to probably be varied from other cities, but I think our formula is unique in basically the way this city has grown. So, you know, to me, I think we've taken that public input. I think we've been doing that for the last couple years. Specifically on this, I don't know when those talks all started with the ordinance and that, but it sounds like throughout the year one change was made that didn't work out so good, and I think they've modified it from there. So, I don't know, is there any other... anything you want to add to any of that, Troy or Wendy or Bobby or?
Just a couple things. We have been putting it out there to developers for probably the past 6 months about the change and the new standards, so they have known about it. And then during the comp plan and the Envision Idaho, there were multiple meetings where I was at getting information and input from people about parks and open space. So those meetings did occur. I don't know if certain people were invited or not. I do know one of them in particular was at the high school commons, where we got a lot of good information. So we did have meetings about that.
Yes.
So one of the big concerns that was brought up in the letters talked about, you know, HOA dues and things like that, and Councilmember McPherson even talked about that. And I think what Troy presented was talking about the credits and the vision to look at then the city being able to make that into the park and really work with that and take care of that, and then using that particular neighborhood that closed off a section of the Cree for only HOAs, that ultimately I think I envision that being the goal of this too. This isn't about HOA dues that will be due for the community, because I think they took that into strong consideration looking at what they presented when it came to the offering of the credits, and then Bobby coming out and saying, yeah, we have the capacity to take care of these things and do these things. So I don't know if that doesn't fall into a concern of mine, but I know it was mentioned and brought up by Councilman McPherson, so I kind of wanted to just follow up with that a little bit. You talked about, you know, it falling on the taxpayers. Well, at that point, it opens it up to the public anyways, as a nice added area for people to really have that open space and do what they want. So I think it's an all-encompassing vision on what we're trying to do with this.
I still feel the information tonight, in my eyes, kind of contradict a little bit what the city's trying to accomplish. And I have no problem with the city and their open space. I feel an obligation to the community. I would still like to table it in order to do a little more research on what was given us tonight.
That was a fault.
Additionally, school sites are considered an open space too, which are usually larger acres, 10 plus acres. So when we were doing this, we kind of factored that in there as well.
School sites and anything that becomes public use, right? So school site or
their pathways, trails, yeah.
Pathways or whatever. Yes, Mr. Gigray.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, Bill Gigray, city attorney. My input at this stage is more procedural, not substantive. Just reminding you of the procedure that you're faced with here so that it may help you decide how you want to proceed. This is your public hearing on a consideration of an amendment of your zoning ordinances as required by the Local Land Use Planning Act and your city ordinance. If you decide that you want to proceed with the passage of the ordinance in its form as it is before you now, at some point you would close the public hearing and then consider whether or not you're going to waive the three readings, which takes a vote of one plus the full council, which means you all have to vote to suspense with the rule and to move on to pass it, or if that doesn't pass, you will have two other, at least one more reading, and one maybe more after that. If you decided that you wanted to continue this matter for further consideration and deliberation and keep the hearing open for a time certain, which you would set this evening, because this ordinance involves a number of different sections of the CUNA City Code as well as sections of the ordinance, and there may have been comment about different parts of it. It seemed like most had to do with open space, but I think there were a couple of other raised. It would strike me that what might be most meaningful and easier to handle would be, if you did continue it for additional comment, that those who wish to comment in opposition or requesting any change in the proposed ordinance would address in writing what section it is that they wish were changed, either that they want to leave it alone or they're okay with the change, but it should read this way, and then list those specifically. And those were provided in your packet before the next meeting, then it seems to me there could be a little more orderly discussion about what you're going to do and what you would consider for approval. But I think at this point it's a matter of your discretion about how you want to proceed.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so this is an ordinance, so there is potential for three readings and approval, and so you do have time to make some changes. What we have done in the past is make some edits and then come back for a second reading with that, so we can certainly add the commas that Councilmember Buben von der Haar wants, and we can also, if you would like, we could direct staff to take comment however we want to do that, or...
Mr. Mayor, with your permission.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I would recommend if there are going to be substantive changes to this ordinance that the hearing should continue. If they're just minor edits and we're taking an S out and putting a comma in here or there and the substance is exactly the same, then, you know, I think the edit part's fine, which we've done in the past. So as you consider this, if you're going to look at any changes that are would be considered substantive, I strongly recommend you continue the hearing.
Correct. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I guess my recommendation, take it or leave it, can be that we make the changes that Brianna had suggested on the text, and then we leave the public hearing open and come back for a second reading. Is there anything in particular that you would like to have looked at, council has suggested that, you know, if we have some specific things, we can have those given to us in writing. And
you know, after I review what's given me tonight by both the city and the public, I might have some questions I'd like to direct to Wendy or Bob. So,
okay. So that would be my suggestion, however you want to do a motion. And then if we're going to leave the public hearing open, we do need to add a date certain to that.
Okay. Hello, Chris.
Hi. Due to the upcoming holiday, we have an early cutoff by 2 days in order to get the packet out in a timely manner and meet our conditions. And maybe possible to consider that the hearing would postpone to the meeting after the next due to that early cutoff. We can certainly, that would allow more time for public input if you were so desired.
So you're saying the meeting on the 9th? Oh, whoops, wrong one again. 17th then?
Yes, because that would be the regular cutoff, not the early one. We have an early one because of the Thanksgiving holiday.
Okay.
So that would limit the time frame for being able to get any additional written testimony into the packet. But certainly we'll work within whatever parameters council gives.
I will be out of the city on December 17th and unavailable, so
if this is something that we could get questions and things ready to roll, that my preference is stick with December 3rd. But I don't know what your thoughts are on that. I
see the clerk's side of it, where getting information out and getting it presented because of the holiday cutoff, but I guess we exchange Brianna for you at that point if we want to do the 17th. What are your thoughts, Richard?
I don't care.
It's me. It's me.
Yeah.
Oh.
You can always kick it into January if you choose.
We'll have the new council, though, then.
Yeah. That was a concern, but... if that it would scares be easier, some. It would give the public a little bit additional opportunity with the holidays and everything going on.
I'd be okay pushing it to January. I'd love to be a part of that final discussion too. And I clearly get it. If you guys don't want to wait, that's fine. I'm not going to hold you to it. But that would be January 6th. It looks like 7th.
Does that meet with everyone's?
What a way to start off the new year. So.
Well, I'm excited to get it going. I think it's a good thing. We need to get this, get our ordinances matching our new comp plan and move forward. So I think it is an exciting one.
Okay. So then. I can then move that we, I don't need to close anything.
I
move we continue the public hearing to January the 7th, 2020, where we will hear more testimony from staff. And is it still open to the public at that point as well? Yes, I'm getting a yes.
Yep.
Okay. There's my motion.
Second.
As rough as it is.
Okay, motion is made and seconded to continue the public hearing on this matter for January 7th of 2020. What else was there in there? Is that it? Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm just clarifying. Will council be taking oral public testimony, or is it, as Council Cardoza had asked for, written public testimony so that I have a proper motion written?
I think, like council suggested, written would be probably the most preferable. That way we can spend a little more time looking at it.
So then I would clarify with testimony from staff and written testimony from public. Is that correct?
Is that acceptable? Yes.
Okay. Yes. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, along with that, I would suggest that those who submit written testimony would certainly be hopefully available for questions from council. That doesn't, just so they're, you may have some questions based on what they're writing. You may want to give them an opportunity to clarify if you have a question. So when that's stated here, it's clear that they may have an opportunity if you have a question. But I do think that's a good way to proceed, and that those that have concerns with this proposed ordinance, if they can draft specific concerns or language that they are agreeable with or whatever, section by section, I think it'll be easier for you to look at and review and consider. I mean, it'll be up to them, but. Thank you.
Okay. So I think the only thing you need to add to your motion is the written testimony from the public and the oral from the council for the continuation.
Okay. I would like to add to my motion the written testimony from the public to be entered into the record and read by council. And what else? Is that
good?
Good. Okay.
And I'll second that.
Okay, so a motion is made and seconded to continue the public hearing for January 7th of 2020. We'll accept written testimony from the public and for review from council. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. Next item, 7A, consideration to approve 1903-TE, a time extension. Doug Hansen.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, for the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, Idaho, 83634. The application before you this evening is for the time extension request of Rising Sun Estates, located at 2067 East CUNA Road, CUNA, Idaho, 83634. The application is compliant with the comprehensive plan and future land use map, and staff has determined that this application is compliant with Title 6 of CUNA City Code and Title 50 of Idaho Code. With that, I will answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I think this is kind of just a standard procedure so that they don't have to start the process all over. So I don't think there's anything controversial here, although he is controversial.
Good?
Good.
Richard? You're good?
What?
I'm good.
Yeah, we're good.
Thumbs up?
Okay. I move we approve 1903-TE time extension for the Rising Sun Estates.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the time extension for 1903-TE for Rising Sun Estates. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Consideration to approve $40,000 from contingency for IT upgrades. Jared Empey.
Does this have to do with Richard's computer?
No, Richard didn't do anything about it.
Well,
it
wasn't IT stuff. I just figured.
You guys got a problem with my color?
I like it.
You get a $40,000 computer now.
That's right.
The only way we can find you could operate.
Just so it works.
Mayor and Council, Jared Empey, City Treasurer. And I'll just read my memo here. As a result of a recent internal review of IT services, I'm submitting a request for contingency funding to perform the following. Upgrade utility billing computers to perform the billing process. Enhance security and reliability of data through off-site backups. Reliable round-the-clock monitoring of servers and additional on-site service to complete necessary upgrades. As stated above, 7 utility billing-related computers must be upgraded by January 31st, 2020, in order to maintain compatibility with current accounting and billing software. In addition, 2 servers must be upgraded to meet specification requirements. Without the necessary upgrade, the city would not be able to bill or record payments for enterprise or general fund services. In addition, this request would enhance the reliability of our backup data in the case of a cyber attack or disaster that resulted in a physical loss of data. In the event of a catastrophe, data would be available through storage offsite that would be retrieved with minimal downtime. Lastly, the request would enable reliable round-the-clock monitoring of the city's servers with testing every 3 minutes and notification in the event of an outage. This would greatly enhance city staff's ability to shorten downtime of services, even when an outage occurs on a weekend or after hours. In order to make these necessary and vital enhancements, I request $40,000 be authorized from contingency, which will be drawn from the following funds: general $15,200, water $10,400, sewer $10,400, and irrigation $4,000. And so, basically, over the last few weeks, we've undergone an internal review and found that basically, as I stated in the memo, we have several computers that will no longer be compatible with our current accounting software, which makes it so that we will no longer be able to accurately bill, take payments. And so the only way to do that is to upgrade those machines. The reason for this is the accounting software requires us to upgrade to Windows 10 whereas we're only running on Windows 7 currently. Generally, that isn't an issue. However, our accounting software is forcing us to upgrade, and that goes for the servers as well. For instance, the servers currently, we have two servers that are running on 2008 operating system, and they have to at least be 2012 or 2016. And so, like I say, this has to be completed by January 31st, 2020. Another item that we're looking at is just simple backups of data. So in the case of if the city hall burned down or if a cyber attack, ransomware, were placed on the city's servers or other equipment, and we had to somehow obtain that data, it would be quite difficult unless there was a reliable backup. Currently, we do have a tape backup system. However, that's kind of like running a VHS currently type technology. So from different people that we've talked to, we've learned that that may not be the most reliable way of backing up our data. So what we're currently looking at is backing it up with a third party and then being able to retrieve that basically immediately in the case of downtime or in the case of a catastrophe. And then, as we stated, round-the-clock monitoring. So the way it works currently is basically if we have an outage of services, we basically have to find that out ourselves. But if we have reliable round-the-clock monitoring, our IT firm could potentially test our servers every 3 minutes, communicating and making sure that basically we have minimal downtime. So that's what this proposal would encapsulate. And I stand for any questions.
Okay. Questions?
I don't have any. Nope. Necessary evil, I think.
Forced upgrade.
Needs done anyway, it sounds like. So.
Yeah.
Got to stay up with it. So. You good?
I didn't hear him. Could you repeat what you said? I'm good.
Okay. I move we approve $40,000 from contingency for IT upgrades as listed by Jared.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the $40,000 from contingency for IT upgrades. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Consideration to approve $50,000 from contingency for City Hall expansion. Bob Buckman.
Mayor and Council, this is a request to add on to the back of the building. As you can see in the drawing on page 7C, 2 of 2. Basically, it'd be adding three offices out the back of the building on the existing concrete pad. We would move that out. After we built the offices, we'd move out the patio another 10 feet out behind that, so we wouldn't lose the patio space. We'd maintain that for the outdoor concerts and such. This would give us the city clerk some extra room that is desperately needed. I'm sure all of you guys have seen her staff elbow to elbow in there getting their job done. I think this was always kind of a plan we had when the time was necessary. I think I make this request letting you know that the time is necessary in our opinion. With the addition of HR too, it also give her a private space to be able to conduct her business, and which requires a lot of sensitivity and a private office. And it solves another problem by allowing the building department to be able to use the entire area over where the building permitting is. And it frees up a lot of space, adds a little bit of storage. So with that said, I'd stand for any questions.
Okay. Questions? Yes, Richard.
If I could have the floor. Bob, would it be better to have human resources where storage is, move storage over in between the human resources and city clerk?
Potentially, my only concern with that would be if planning and zoning needed to go into the storage area, they'd have to go through the human resource office. The layout of it is definitely open for suggestions and or modifications. Just a basic concept.
What human resources would have to go through storage every time to get to a room?
That would actually be an open corridor. So I know it shows a door on the plan, but it's actually just an opening. So it'd be like walking through a hallway to get to your office.
Are we giving up some safety by having all those exterior doors out there?
Not in my opinion. They would be all secured and on the alarm system with our magnetic lock system. Okay.
I mean, there's windows there, so, but I just think.
So the way it works now, that like the back door off of my office is on the magnetic lock. It's unlocked insofar as you can get out there. You have to push the button to get out. But okay. People from the outside can't get in without access code. So that provides that security. The only ones that are actually open all day long are the two front doors here.
And Mayor and Councilman Cardozo, if I could also add, I actually think it would have the opposite effect. I think it would actually be safer for the employees of the city to have more passive egress in case of emergency.
Okay.
So.
That's true, too. But our IT will be backed up, so we're good.
Yes.
That's right.
Okay. I move we approve $50,000 from contingency for City Hall expansion.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the $50,000 from contingency for City Hall expansion. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. I apologize. I need to take about a 2-minute recess if no one objects.
Absolutely not.
Okay. request for authorization to proceed with advertisement and bidding of CUNA Downtown Revitalization Phase 2. Chris Ingalls. And Bob.
Mayor and Council, this is kind of the exciting part of Phase 2 of downtown. It's kind of where the rubber meets the road. This is more of a formality. We're just requesting and notifying you that we are going out to bid for this project, and we're pretty excited that all the hard work from everybody is getting close to paying off and having the downtown finished. The plan right now is to go out to bid, hopefully in December, but if not December, in January, and then start construction April or May, and be done by CUNA Days. So we're pretty excited and just wanted to inform you guys where we were at.
Did the last phase took longer because it was longer, right?
This phase is actually going to take a little bit longer. The phase one started in June and was done right before CUNA Days. So that's, okay. I think we're anticipating about 45 to 60 days longer construction window.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
You guys good?
Yeah. We also need a formal motion if we could authorize us to proceed.
So formal motion means you have to put on a tie.
Yeah, well, sorry. Nope. No formals out of me. I move then we approve resolution number R88-2019.
Nope.
Just authorize him to advertise him.
One above.
D. Item D.
Item D.
Oh, my bad. Sorry. I move we authorize the city clerk to advertise and bid for the downtown revitalization phase 2.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Item E, consideration to approve resolution number RD8-2019 and request for $24,950 from contingency to pay for JUB professional services. Chris Ingles, city clerk.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. Chris Ingles for the record. So the request is for $24,950 from contingency. This is a portion that will cover phase one, phase two, and also the planning process for all the other downtown phases that are to come, which 4th Street is in works. It is in order for us to have design standards for the downtown area that are actually in code. I've talked with Wendy. She knows that they're coming. We'll take stakeholder and public input, as well as work closely with residents and the businesses in the downtown. In essence, what it does is it continues what the design committee originally intended for downtown, which is that we have a consistent palette and pattern and trend to follow. And so in order for us to have those standards that can go into the code, that is the cost. I stand for questions.
Okay, questions for Chris.
Do you need me to put on a tie again?
Please and thank you.
Nope. I move we approve resolution R88-2019 for $24,950 for contingency to pay JUB for their services.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution R88-2019 for $24,950 for JUB services. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Consideration to approve ordinance 29-45, an ordinance of the City Council of CUNA, Idaho, amending Section 3 of Chapter 6 of Title 1 of CUNA City Code, establishing the regular meeting schedule of the City Council and providing for the City Clerk to post the regular meetings and schedule and directing the City Clerk and providing an effective date. And I think this is just a normal action item, so we can no need to slow track it. We can.
Okay. I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2019-45.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of Ordinance 2019-45. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2019-45.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve Ordinance number 2019-45. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
That motion carries. Mayor Council announcements. We had the state of the city went good. I had some good attendance from Highway District and Ada County Commissioner, and our sheriff came, and along with our chief and Mr. Cardoza, thank you, and a couple of legislators. One thing I will tell you just a little bit. So the legislators have really started diving into property taxes and the funding that city and county governments have, and seems to be a push for us to feel the pain of something or another. I'm not real sure what that is, but looks like we're going to spend most of the legislative session trying to keep them from taking the tools out of our toolboxes, I guess, so to speak. So I don't know exactly what they're trying to accomplish there, but there's some things that are a little uncomfortable. The one thing we did talk about with Representative John Vanderwoude was maybe possibly, and this hasn't in anything in legislative form yet, but talking about some of the ways to protect people on a fixed income. So at the age 62, perhaps, you would be able to cap your property taxes and not have to see any more increases from that time on. So people that are on a fixed income and don't have the ability to raise their income in any way would be protected in that fashion. And so I think, I don't know exactly what that looks like, but to me that sounds like a really good idea. So, and then he did also mention that they might possibly be looking at raising the property tax exemption to 200,000 instead of the current 100,000. So I don't know, in my opinion, that's just kind of a tax shift. I don't know exactly who they're helping there with that, but I'm sure that they would do a study to figure that out. But anyway, it's going to be an interesting session this year. We'll see where we get with things. I don't know if I mentioned the last time the Idaho State School Board Association voted not to proceed with the impact fees for school districts, so I'm not sure where that's going to go yet. Our Board of Trustees, I think, is still dedicated to making that happen at some point in time, but it's going to be hard to get that past the legislature when your own association has voted no, so that looks like that'll be dead in the water for at least this year. But anyway, that's about all I can think of right offhand, unless somebody over there has anything. Yes, Bill.
Just a point on legislation, and as you know, I represent a lot of local government agencies, and it's not an even playing field. Some are far more property tax reliant, particularly fire districts and a lot of other districts. Hopefully, there is a united front by local government, and I think it's an opportunity for local government to try to champion how important the services that local government provide to our standard of living. I think that's easy to forget. You know, it's the something for nothing thing. Well, we don't need this. We don't need to pay our taxes. I mean, you look at everything that a city does, everything cities can do, education, police, fire, sanitary water and sewer, hugely important things to our standard of living, and they all have to be conducted, for the most part, roads and streets, on and on and on, by local government. And I've just heard over the years a lot of bashing of local government, you know, and I think it's time to educate the public as well as the legislators that your standard of living is very dependent on it, and I'm sure there's a lot of, and you're closer to it than I am, Mr. Mayor, but you kind of get a sense there's a rural versus urban kind of tug here. And it strikes me that if they would allow local options, so if Fremont County doesn't want to raise any property tax, the voters over there could decide they don't want any, and they can just go out and raise sheep, which is fine. You know, and in this area where we need maybe local options to raise additional funds to do things that we have to do, we have those tools. And in my mind, the argument is partly, are we going to have Boise legislature control all of these items, or should this be a local decision made by the local voters, made by the local constituents, and then you know, and I don't know how you get something as complicated as property tax through a legislature in 1 year without making some mistakes. It seems to me they ought to take this under advisement. This is something that needs to be done. Take a year, get more input, and then come back with something that's, I mean, if they're going to deal with it, there are some things in there that ought to be fixed. It's like you don't set a levy. But the statute seems to imply that you do. You don't. You set a dollar amount. And there's been progressions in the property tax law where they haven't paid attention to some of the other provisions. And so I'm hoping the associations that represent local government are working together with the United Front on this with a clear message to the public that your standard of living is very dependent on local government being able to provide the services. And if you're looking for economic development, Lisa can tell, if you got poor education, you got poor roads and streets, You got a sewer system that's failing. You don't have infrastructure for irrigation. Your city looks like terrible. You're not going to attract employment. They're going to go elsewhere.
Well, I think you're right, though, about the Boise part. I think that they look at the fact that Boise can build a $100 million library without bonding for it, and they think that all cities are in that same type of boat. So I think they just, honestly, they just need to sit on in our budget hearings and help us out. If we're making mistakes, tell us where we're making mistakes and work on it that way. But otherwise, I have no idea of exactly how that's going. But
and I think
we'll continue to go.
And there's some charter issues, aren't there, with Lewiston and Boise? Because there were some charters of school districts and some cities. Now, I don't know when they expanded their boundaries, if they went away from that. You know, there were some charters those places had before the state became a state, and they had some options that nobody else has.
Yeah. Yeah, Boise School District is one example of that.
The Boise City Independent. Yeah.
Sorry. All right. Anybody else have anything? All right. Well, meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Look at that. Still on the address. Have you been working?